This is Robert Berry, and you're listening to the Ludini Rock and Roll Circus.
Today on the Ludini Rock and Roll Circus, you're going to hear the story of Robert Berry. The name may not jump out at you at first, but Robert has been involved with some amazing projects with a lot of amazing artists over the years, and you're really going to enjoy getting to know Robert, his music, and he's got an amazing story. You guys are going to love it. You're listening to the Ludini Rock and Roll Circus, changing rock history one podcast at a time. Welcome back, everybody. This week, this week's story is the story of Robert Berry, a great musician, bass player. So he's holding down the low end, but that is just like scratching the surface of what Robert's about. He's worked with Keith Emerson, Carl Palmer. You guys maybe know those names, right? Brief stint fronting Ambrosia. He's also the bass player with the Greg Kinn band, and you guys know Greg. I had him on the podcast about a year ago. But no, like I said, that's just scratching the surface. Robert's got a whole a slew of projects and things that he's been involved with. It's going to be a lot of fun. He's got a new record out and a great song we're going to play here in a second. But first, you are listening to Ludini Rock and Roll Circus. Our website is LudiniRockAndRollCircus.com. Check back often for more great artist stories, music podcasts, and weekly features such as Bluesy Tunes Tuesday and Wicked Riff Wednesday. So all kind of cool stuff there. When you hear the ones you like, please share them around. This is how we promote music in the second decade of the 21st century. It's done with you guys clicking that share button and telling your friends, this is awesome. You got to check this out. So please do that. We also have some cool merchandise there. And if you pick yourself up something, you put your money where your mouth is, it really helps us keep the lights on and keeps us doing what we need to be doing here to get great guitar-driven rock out to you guys. If you would like to delve a little deeper, if you would like exclusive music, exclusive video, get access to the planning sessions for the podcast, get a say on what some of our topics are, that's just amongst a bunch of other cool stuff you can do. You want to get involved with my inner circle, you can do that at lulombardimusic.com/innercircle. That is lulombardimusic.com/innercircle, and you can find out more about that there. As I was saying, we have Robert Berry with us today. Robert, welcome to the Ludini Rock and Roll Circus.
I am glad to be here, but I don't know whether to call you Lou or Ludini.
Well, Lou is fine. Lou's fine. That's no problem.
All right, Lou.
Okay, cool.
I'm glad to be here. I'm just joking with you. But yeah, you know, and it's funny that one of my things I've always had to do was figure out how to be in a keyboard-driven band in a rock and roll guitar world. And so it's an interesting little left turn for your show to have a guy like me on that worked with Keith Emerson. So I'm glad to be here.
Keith is a, in Emerson, like in Palmer, I mean, Keith really in many ways is the guitar player in that band. I mean, he's like, his keys are kind of filling that space. In fact, I saw a funny interview with him where, you know, he was always talking about how they didn't want to have a guitar player because they always played too loud.
Yeah.
And, good.
What else is funny is he was considered the Jimi Hendrix of the keyboards. Absolutely. Because no other keyboard player, you know, threw the keyboard on its back, played it backwards, stabbed knives into the keys. Mm-hmm. I mean, this guy was a monster on the keyboard playing wise, but also an entertainer. So it wasn't unlike a guitar player, his whole persona, which I can't name another keyboard player that did that.
Absolutely. No. No, not at all. So, you know, Keith, we have great respect here for Keith Emerson and his work, and people like John Lord as well, and a lot of great guys over the years that have rocked out on the keyboard. So it's all good. So, Robert, you have you grew up sort of steeped in music, didn't you? Your father had a music store or something like that. How did you get started?
You know, steeped is a very kind word. I like to say sentenced to music.
Okay.
My mom sang in my dad's band. They had a big band.
Okay.
And from the second I popped out, I'm hearing trumpets and saxophone, drums and string bass. And, you know, like Frank Sinatra kind of music.
Right.
Like big band stuff in the living room, probably while I'm trying to sleep, the rehearsing. My mom stopped singing when I was born. My dad opened a music store. He still played a bit, but he was more around town. And he had Vox guitars and amps. Now, in the 60s, Vox was what the Beatles used and every other English band that came over. So when I'm a little guy, I walk in. I'm looking at one right now. I have a recording studio here in Campbell, California. And after I lost my dad, I collected all the Vox amps I bought them that I could find from the 60s, and I'm looking at a Super Beetle right now, and it's a beautiful piece, and it was taller, way taller than I was when they first came into the store. And I was influenced by these beautiful amplifiers and the sound of all this, the local guys coming in and playing, you know, Rickenbacker and Les Pauls, 57 Stratocasters, you know, through these amps, because that's what everybody had back then.
Yeah.
And it really left a big impression on me. I know that later on we're going to play the single from the album, Powerful Man, and that's exactly what that song is about. It's how our families, and especially our dads, because we look up to our dads a lot of times, how they, their power, and like my dad's power, well, he wasn't powerful when by beating people up, but he provided Vox guitars and amps to the Silicon Valley community here in San Jose, California. And I was impressed, and that left an impression on me. Just like, get back to Keith Emerson, his son Aaron, probably in the bassinet, was under the stage for ELP, and now Aaron has a band and plays keyboards. Steve Howe, who I played with, his son Dylan, fantastic drummer, probably in the bassinet under the stage when Yes was playing, you know? I mean, these are powerful men in a different way than having power over people. They sort of have power with people through music.
Yeah.
And I was raised like that, and it was all music for me all the time. I had 8 years of classical piano. I had 2 years of jazz piano in high school. So I was super schooled in it, but really what I found my comfortable position was being a vocalist and a bass player. That's what I really loved doing. So I kind of left the keyboards behind. You know, I liked that the power of the bass and, you know, you want to push the band with the low end a little
bit.
Yeah. You know, so I did that. I had a college band called Hush that was a progressive rock cover band. We did Yes and Genesis and all that stuff. And it developed into a straighter rock band, which is more like a Foreigner meets Boston kind of thing as time went on. And after that, I got a call from Carl Palmer here at my studio and sort of launched my career into the big leagues. Big leagues. I'm the luckiest guy you never heard of, though.
Well, you know, there are tons of the guys out there that who may not necessarily be household names, but have really made an important contribution and inspired a lot of people as well. And I can definitely see you sort of in that category for sure. So what? Tell us a little bit about moving forward. When you get the call, you end up working with, how did you end up working with Keith Emerson and Carl Palmer?
You know, I had this band Hush I mentioned, and it, you know, after 10 years, you know, the college, a little bit of high school, college, and it wasn't working. There was nowhere to go with it. So I broke it up, and I actually had recorded a bunch of songs during that time down at my studio that weren't right for Hush. They were a little more grooving. They were a little more, oh God, I don't know, how would I say it? Like Lou Gramm vocals mixed with Stevie Winwood music, you know, something like that.
Yeah.
And it wasn't right for this more straight rock Hush thing. And I had a company in Taiwan offer me 500 albums for free at the press if I would, you know, use their company later on. Well, I couldn't chance a client's company or record on that.
Okay.
So I gave them my songs I was recorded that were just sitting in a drawer that I was never going to do anything with, just to test it. 10 songs. This album came back. It was just gorgeous. You know, they have that shiny, clear shrink wrap, hard shrink wrap, and the printing was gorgeous. I'm like, oh my God, look at this. Well, a friend of mine that actually had laid out the cover for me as a favor, unbeknownst to me, sent it to all these managers and record companies.
Uh-huh.
And Herbie Herbert, it wound up in Herbie's desk, which is Journey's manager, and Herbie liked it. Herbie hooked me up with Geffen Records. I started doing showcases for Geffen. Geffen started to groom me as this sort of Bryan Adams meets Sting kind of guy.
Okay.
And they were going to put me out as a solo career. And Asia was having problems right then with John Wetton. And they were thinking about getting somebody new. So Carl called me right here, the same, right where I'm sitting when I'm talking to you.
Okay.
Carl Palmer calls this guy who has no career, basically. I mean, I just, you know, I had a good band, a little record contract, but it's small time stuff.
Right.
And he says, this is Carl Palmer. Is this Robert? Said, yeah. Yeah. And he goes, I like your cassette tape. I like your music. And we're either going to continue Asia, or what I really want to do is start a new band. And I want an American singer. I like your voice. I like your songs. I'm kind of flabbergasted. Like, yep, I'm going, wow. I mean, this is, you know, one of my heroes, Emerson, Lake, and Palmer, used to play some of their songs in Hush in the early days. So, yeah. And to make a long story even longer, Carl and I tried for a year to get a band together. We got together with Jolynn Turner from Rainbow.
Right.
That didn't work out. We got together with Don Aries from Ozzy's band, keyboard player. That didn't work out. We tried a bunch of different things. Nothing worked out. But in the meantime, Steve Howe had a band called GTR.
Right. Mm-hmm. I remember the band.
Steve Howe and Steve Hackett were not getting along. Steve Hackett left. They needed a replacement. I get a call from Steve Howe. I like your cassette tape. Would you? I'm going, really?
Wow.
What is going on? The luckiest guy you never heard of, right? And I said, wow. He goes, why don't you come over to my house? Let's meet. You know, I got to get a feel, see what kind of person you are, was his whole thing. Steve's a very mellow kind of guy. I mean, another one of my heroes. I played all kinds of Yes music in Hush in the early years. I'm going, oh my God, Steve Howe. Went over his house, had a little lunch, coffee, tea, whatever it was, a couple hours. He goes, well, here's a couple songs I'm working on. Take them home, see what you think. I took them back to my flat, and I had my manager was Brian Lane then, who was Yes's manager and A's manager and Donovan, big time manager. He got me a flat right in Kensington High Street, downtown London. I was living the life, although I had nothing going on yet. And I took this cassette and I heard this one song. It's called "You Only Have Yourself to Blame," and I went, "Oh my God, that's awful! You're blaming somebody else." I said, the Steve Howe that I think I know through Yes and all this cool music and really deep stuff, you know, he would say, I only have myself to blame. I'm sorry about that. So I went and I rewrote that song and I put more what I consider Steve Howe, like breaks and stuff where he would play guitar and more chords and more Yes kind of harmony. I took it back to Steve the next day. And, you know, I learned a long time ago, if you just do exactly what you do, what you think is right, you're real, if people like it, it'll last you a lifetime. If you're faking it, it doesn't last very long. They figure it out, you know? So I said, Steve, I have this. I'm just going to play it for you. And he had a little 8-track recorder. I can't play it and sing it at the same time because it's too hard. It's got Steve Howe stuff. So I put down the guitar, put down the vocals, and he just sat there. And let me listen to this one more time, he said. He listened to it. And it got done, and he looked at me, he goes, I have not had anybody work on my material like this and do this kind of job except for John Anderson, the leader, you know, the singer.
Yeah,
of Yes.
Yeah, of course.
And I went, wow. I mean, that was really something. Here's another song. So he sends me home again. I do another song, The Love We Share, do the exact same thing. It just wasn't right, you know. Wasn't right for my vision of what GTR would sound like and what Steve Howe and I would do together. And I came back, and he was just so happy. I joined the band, wrote all the songs with him, all but a couple of them. And it unfortunately, the singer hated me for that, and I had a hard time with him, so I left. I got them all their songs, got them the record contract approved. I quit. The day I'm going back home, or the day before, Brian Lane calls, Keith Emerson wants to have a lunch with you. I'm thinking, what? What is going on in my life?
I'm going to get something out of this trip to England yet.
Luckiest guy you never heard of, right?
Right.
And so this was, you know, you'd think I would have been nervous with Carl and Steve, but I wasn't. I was thinking, well, this is what I need to do. This is where I need to go. With Keith Emerson, I was nervous. I thought, this guy is going to be such a wacky genius that he won't be able to complete a sentence. He'll be talking in some kind of weird musician time signatures. And it was anything but that. We had a great lunch. We decided we're going to move forward. We did move forward. Three had a top 10 song. Keith and I stayed friends and did other projects together. And he recorded for me on all kinds of things down at my studio over the 27 years before we decided to do another follow-up.
And that is, and that's what we have out right now. 3.2 is the follow-up.
That's right.
Okay. And this is just released on August 10th on Frontier Records.
And by noon, it was sold out in every country. I mean, I don't want to sound like I'm bragging. I'm just amazed. It was, I went, pardon me? Nobody can get it. It's sold out everywhere. You know, a few of the record stores, the small places with their very few record stores, they had a few copies left. But Amazon, by noon, all countries sold out.
Oh, wow.
Oh, my God.
Excellent. Fan-freaking-tastic. Let's go ahead and take a little sample now. We're going to listen to the single Powerful Man, and then we're going to come back and talk a little bit more. But, guys, check this out. This is Very cold. You're gonna. This is current, but it will also take you back. It's got this really neat vibe. You guys are gonna do it. Powerful Man. And is this under 3.2 or is this under Robert Barry or what do we call it?
No, it's on the 3.2 album, and that is because we had the band 3 in 1988. By the time Keith and I decided to do another one, it's as in Softwares version 2.2.
Gotcha.
So it's 3.2, and it was done by the two of us. We weren't gonna. Carl wasn't going to be involved in it, although Keith only was involved in a bit of it for about 3 months because he died, unfortunately. Yeah. So listen to the song. We'll talk about it.
All right. This is Powerful Man 3.2 on the Ludini Rock and Roll Circus.
Down the path of my youth where it guides me. The flesh and blood unfolds. Secrets of my life I hold. And what I need in answers I could find the deep inside. Cause I'm the soul. Still got those innocent kids' eyes. I won't take it on the chin. I'm a gonna win, gonna live life. I'm the soul. But I was raised from its twists and turns along the trail of the journey's end. And time, it's a heavy load, the bumps and grinds are along the quest. But how the story goes, nobody really knows. But at every corner, you've been right there by my side. Cause I'm the soul. I'm gonna win and I gotta live lies. I'm the soul that was raised from a distance by the world's demands.
Okay, very cool song. And I definitely hear the bit of even though there's not like a whole lot of guitar in it, it does have that sort of the GTR. It has that sort of Asia. It is more accessible, more pop influence than, say, maybe what you would think of with some of the more progressive like ELP music. So why don't you go ahead and tell us a little bit about the album, how you guys worked on it, and how it eventually all shook out.
Okay. And it's funny, you know, people always say pop, but I think of it more of AOR rock.
There you are.
Because it's not Britney Spears, no. You know.
Well, you know, us older folks, you know, thinking back to the 80s. So yeah. When I say pop, I'm not thinking pop like, no, I'm not thinking like, yeah, Lady Gaga. I'm thinking
the
like.
The reason I say that is because in 1988, when that song came out and we were on tour, Guns N' Roses were getting really big,
yeah,
and grunge was coming in, Nirvana, that kind of stuff. And everywhere we went on our tour into the radio, they would always say, God, this song talking about sounds so good on our station. Surrounding all that rock, it actually keeps up with it. It has such a big sound.
Yeah.
It's powerful, you know. And a lot of the, you know, keyboard bands are kind of wimpy. You know, they just didn't really have much of balls, I'd say.
Right, yeah.
So Powerful Man is the song on the album that, of course, is about all the guys I've worked with. Sammy Hagar I played with for a couple of years, 3 years. All their sons are great musicians. They followed in their footsteps. Powerful Man is how we're influenced by our fathers. And, you know, the Powerful Man can be a mother, really. It's you know, anything that influences you when you're young, you become who you are. There was a power there that inspired you.
Right.
So, and one of the things, like I said before, I've had to figure out how to put guitar in the middle of a big keyboard album where it actually, if I took it out, it wouldn't have the same power. You'd be amazed how much guitar is really in there in the choruses,
right,
and the big sounds. And on the rest of the album, there's a lot more guitar solos and stuff, too. There's even an acoustic guitar piece on the album because I'm big on guitar, but this was a Keith Emerson-driven album.
Right.
And, we worked on it. What happened? Keith was so criticized for doing songs instead of just fancy ELP stuff,
yeah,
that his fans were hard on him, where he just didn't want to do a follow-up album. They made him feel like he was doing something wrong, and it really affected him. 27 years later, a record company puts out a Live in Boston 3 CD, and to Keith at first, it's just a paycheck. Oh, in advance, I put in the bank, great. He didn't want to think about 3 for 27 years. But then an album showed up on his doorstep. One of his favorite things to do was sit with a glass of white wine, listen to music at night. That's what he didn't want to go out all over the place. He had enough of that, you know?
Yeah.
And he just happened to put this album on. Oh, I'll check out this 3 thing. Why not? He immediately called me. He was so excited. He goes, Robert. I said, yeah, Keith, what's going on? I just heard the album. He said, we were really a good band. And I said, well, I always thought that. He goes, no. I mean, the plane, it's so hot. I mean, the jamming we did, the energy. And he's like really excited. And I'm thinking, wow, after 27 years of me not really touching the subject because I knew he had left it behind because of the criticism from, yeah, you know, it could have been 5 diehard ELP fans that made him feel really bad about it. There was fans that were saying, you have 2 female background singers. How dare you? That's going to ruin your reputation. I'm thinking, what guy would not want to see 2 female background singers on stage? But this guy had to tell Keith. Anyway, Keith's so excited that I calmly said, well, Keith, what would you think about doing a follow-up? And he calmly said, after being so excited, he said, maybe. And I said, let me call the record company. I'll call you back tomorrow. This Frontiers Records have been trying for 10 years to get me to do a 3 follow-up album. They really wanted it. I said, I'm not going to talk to Keith. I know he won't do it. I called Frontiers in Italy, said, Keith has given me an open door here. Here's what we want. Told him the budget, told him 1 year to do it, complete artistic freedom. President of the record company, Serafino, says, when are you going to get started? I'm in. I called Keith back, and this is kind of sad, actually. I called Keith, I said, Keith, all our demands, everything you want to do, it's there, and I got you this kind of money. And he said, who has that kind of money anymore? I said, these guys want this album. He goes, yeah, but nobody cares. So, oh, you're Keith Emerson. They care. He goes, nobody cares. I'm, you know, my career just isn't going that good. I said, these guys are on it. And I got to tell you, I called back and got another $10,000 on top of that, just so I could call Keith back and say, by the way, I got you a little bonus on that, because they want to make sure you know that how much they, you know how much they want you. And he's all, you should be my manager, he said, right? And I mean, for me, you can hear the excitement in my voice. I start talking fast and the hair on my arm stands up. This was a 27-year-old dream that I couldn't ever realize. All of a sudden, there it was. It was going to happen. And I was ready. And Keith was ready. We talked about it on the phone, in the style, the content, lyrics, all, you know, what we want to be about. And, you know, we don't want about war. We don't want about politics. We want to be positive.
Right.
And we started working on things over the phone. I'll play this for you right here. I'm in front of my Pro Tools. I have a state-of-the-art recording studio. I have the best everything, the Yamaha Concert Grand, Hammond B3. I have Marshalls, High Watts, Vox Amps. It's all here because I used to do a lot of sound-alikes, too, for Paramount Films, and I have to have the best of the best equipment. So what I would do, Keith would get his digital piano in his room, and I have mine in front of the Pro Tools, and he would play something like something really fast like that. And I go, okay. And you go really slow. And you go, no. He go, there's an F in there. Like, okay. And I'd play it, and then I'd sort of play it 2/3 speed, then I'd put it on the Pro Tools, because these were the parts of his, the new creations, that I was going to write the verses and the choruses around. And I had digital files he sent me of all this keyboard stuff he had already recorded. They weren't songs, they were just bits, right. Stuff to inspire me. And we had a couple things from 1988 that we didn't use. Oh, and wow. I said, you know, there's something here now. I didn't like this back then, but this is really good. It's called What You're Dreaming Now. Is the song. If you listen to the whole album, you'll hear that. It's a great, and it's heavy. It's got a lot of guitar in it too, by the way. And so that's what we did. For 3 months, we worked like that, and we really discussed it. And it was interesting to work on it that way over the phone. And it was inspired, like freeing, you know, we just chat back and forth. We never had an ego clash, never an argument. We never had anything like that over the 27 years. Anyway, we got along very well. Then I get a call from his ex-wife, Keith's dead. And for me, that really put the brakes on so many things. My most famous friend, the best keyboard player in the world.
Yeah.
The guy I had a top 10 hit with, my only top 10 hit, the guy I was going to do my 27-year-old dream with, and just a good guy that would call once in a while with a silly joke. And they weren't always good jokes, but they were still, it was funny that Keith Emerson was telling me a bad joke. You know, I mean, yeah. I love that.
Yeah.
And I lost that all with that phone call. And I'm a very up positive guy, but that knocked me way down. That was like losing my dad, you know,
sure.
When I lost my dad, it was very hard for me. And I wasn't going to do anything. And 6 months later, I had an idea. You know, if Aaron Emerson would do this with me, his son, there might be a reason to finish this. We had so much already going. I called him. He goes, I'd love to do that. My mistake was I sent him the really hard song to listen to. And he freaked out. He called me. He goes, that's my dad. I can't play like that.
Oh, shit.
I said, oh, man. I said, you know, I should have said, I mean, Powerful Man's not that hard. I should have sent him that, right? But that wasn't in the form for me to send it yet. And so he said, no, I can't do this. Hmm. But it got the spark going again. I was excited. I said, you know what? Keith always wanted to call the album the number one. Not O-N-E, he'd say, but I want to call the album one. And I thought, and to me, is it 3.21? It's too many numbers. You
right,
know?
Yeah.
And the Beatles had a number one. And I thought, well, we'll talk about that later. We don't need to discuss the name of the album yet. Let's get this thing going. But when he was gone and 6 months down the road, when I was feeling a little bit, you know, more inspired by the music and strong enough to do it, I thought, you know, I'm the only guy that really knows what this is supposed to be. And one is the way I'm going to do it. I'm just going to finish it up on my own.
Yeah.
And that's where we came to now.
So moving forward, there's so many things, guys, just by the audience, I just want to say, Robert's been involved in so many things. We could fill up 3 podcasts easy, but we're kind of focusing on 3 and 3.2 today. So moving forward, Robert, what does the next, you got the album out, It's awesome. What does the next 6 to 12 months look like for you?
There is a tour that's being talked about, a world tour. And I didn't plan on that happening. The reviews have been so good, and people are they're feeling the intent on the music, and Emerson and myself, and really connecting to the lyrics. And it's just spawned this interest in it going out, and for me doing sort of my legacy in music, or my history in music on tour. So I have to add in the middle of this, because it's really opposite. Since you're talking about guitar driven rock, I do the keyboards for Sammy Hagar when he does the Van Halen songs with the Circle.
Okay.
And which is guitar driven music, really. But Eddie Van Halen was a hell of a keyboard player. And so when Sammy does the tours, the Jason Bonham will put on the headphones and the keyboards will come out. That's me playing. So even though that's guitar stuff, I'm still doing the keyboards. I get kind of stuck with this keyboard thing all the time.
That says all those years of piano lessons, but yeah.
That's right, yeah. But Sam and I are good friends too, and he's fantastic. And we'll talk about that another time. But the tour is what's being planned now. There's no dates. They're getting it all together, the marketing and the whole thing. I'm trying to stay out of that. I'm doing so many interviews and spending, I have a studio here too where I'm producing people, and my plate is full, but next year I'm going to shut it all down and just do the tour for, 3-6 months, whatever it is.
And you're going to tour as 3.2 or Robert Barry, or how are you going to, yet?
I think I need to do it as Robert Barry, because I have the first three album material. I have GTR material. I have a great tribute series I do with Magna Carta Records with Yes, Roundabout, and Jethro Tull, Mistral in the Gallery, Rush. I did this tribute series. It's kind of a classic and well-received, and people want to hear it live. So I need to put all these songs together.
Okay.
And then, of course, 3.2 songs, too. So it'll sort of be a history of my music over the last 30 years since I started with Keith.
Sounds like it'd be a fun show to see, for sure. So definitely, where can people find you? Okay, well, segue. Where can find you on the internet?
RobertBarry.com. I'm not a great social media promoter.
Okay.
But RobertBarry.com is a place to see everything. There's a Facebook, which is 3 Emerson Barry Palmer, that a guy runs named Rolf, that is incredible. He's done so much to revamp the energy and the excitement about 3. And then, of course, there's my The Robert Barry, I think, is the Twitter,
right?
It's all that stuff. It's on my website too.
So if we just go to robertbarry.com, and guys, just for those of you that are not familiar with Robert's music, it is Barry, B-E-R-R-Y.
That's right.
So you guys just go to robertbarry.com, and there's the video. There's a great video, by the way, to the track that we played, Powerful Man. It's a powerful video. It's very good. So Robert, thank you, man. This was a lot of fun. I really appreciate you taking some time to talk to us. I need to wrap up the podcast, but I need to do a little business with you when we're done. Do you got a minute to out while I do this real quick?
I will hang out. No problem.
All right. Excellent. All right, guys, the life and times, the very interesting life and times of Robert Barry. And believe me, guys, we haven't scratched the surface. So we're going to have to, at some point, get back with Robert and do a part two, because there's so many cool things. We mentioned briefly that he is the bassist with the Greg Kinn Band, and that's just one small aspect of what Robert has going on. But go to robertbarry.com, check everything out there, and hopefully we're going to catch Robert on tour next year. It's going to be, it sounds like a fantastic show. The track Powerful Man, the 3.2, is out with a lot of cool music on it. So check all that out at robertbarry.com. Real quick, you are listening to the Ludini Rock and Roll Circus. Our website is ludinirockandrollcircus.com. And if you'd like some behind the scenes stuff, stuff, exclusive music, exclusive video, get to sort of be more deeper part of the process here of promoting great music, go to LouLombardiMusic.com/innercircle. That is LouLombardiMusic.com/innercircle for all that. What a wild and fun show we had today. Robert is a just a very gracious guest and a total like encyclopedia of music knowledge, and it was a lot of fun. So we'll catch, thanks to Robert for being here, and we'll catch you guys all next on the next Ludini Rock and Roll Circus.